Welcome to the Bike Talk with Dave podcast. I'm your host, Dave Mabel. Thanks for tuning in. I met today's guest, Josh Sprague, at Gravel Worlds, where he had a booth for his hydration pack company, Orange Mud. I won't lie, Dee and I both like the packs so much that we each bought one for Gravel Worlds, and we've used them several times since then. I think mine still has some mud on it from Schwamigan. Anyway, he was a nice dude, and he happens to live near our kid, just north of Austin, Texas. So when we were down visiting a couple of weeks ago, Josh and I connected and we met at a coffee shop, as I thought it would be fun to hear about the origin of his company, Orange Mud. So I hope you enjoyed getting to know Orange Mud from outside a coffee shop in Austin, Texas, on a rainy Saturday morning. Orange Mud founder, Josh Sprague.
Nah, it's fine. Look at you with the freaking...
I'm constantly covered.
You got the kit.
I do. I have a lot of kit, believe it or not. Yeah, it's insane. I'm actually building... Speaking of kits, I'm building some new ones right now. Got a... they're on order. I've got a super high-end Italian chamois in my bibs, and I've always used a high-end one, but I've got a new high-end one that's in build right now, and new plaid jersey coming. So about 4 weeks out. But I've been wearing it personally for a while. I've just never launched it. But we have, new kits coming. I love a new kit. At least, you know, as a cyclist, it's one of them things where when you wear just a bike short, you're like, this is comfortable. Once you go to a bib, I feel like an idiot. I feel embarrassed even in my own house on a trainer wearing a bib. Like if I don't put a shirt on, and my wife and kids come up, I kind of feel like I need to kind of hide a little bit. But it's awesome.
100%. I 100%
get it. The bib is the only way to go.
Cycling is such a funny sport because there is such a... I've always called it like a fraternity. Mm-hmm. Like you're riding along and you look down to see if somebody's legs are shaved, to see if they belong to the same club as you.
Yeah.
You know, you have something in common.
Yep.
And like the bibs and how you dress and what you wear and the length of your socks and like all of that.
Yep.
Are you a member of this fraternity?
Yep.
Or are you not?
Exactly.
And it's not a... I don't feel like I'm being elitist, although, like, my whole background is road, so I'm sure I'm a road snob.
Yeah, sure.
Although I won't admit it, but I probably am. It's just like, hey, do we have something in common?
Yeah.
We got something to talk about here?
Yeah.
Oh, I see you're, you race? Yeah, I race. Oh, what do you do? I'm a Cat 3, do crits, or oh, I do mountain biking.
Yeah.
You know, it just is something to talk about and something in common, and you see that you have that something in common.
Yep.
And the kits and the bib are part of it.
They're essential, man.
Yep.
They really are.
For sure.
When I was doing, like, got into that longer stuff, I learned a double bib. I literally wear two bibs. And it seems weird, looks weird, but when you're doing that, you don't care. It is all about performance, 100%. And I remember a buddy of mine in the race, I texted, he was behind me, but I texted him. I was like, hey, Ty, I'm like, you ought to try double bibbing, because he was really torn up. And I was like, you should try double bibbing. It's working. I feel good day four of the race. And I'm sitting there like, oh, I'm just motoring along. I'm like a brand new man. I'm like, I can't believe I haven't done this before. I should do this every ride.
Do you wear a pair inside out and then a pair right side?
Nope, both right side out.
Yeah. A friend of mine, Bob Breedlove, does that name ring a bell?
It does ring a bell.
He was a Ram guy, tandem,
double
transcontinental tandem. He was a good friend of ours, but he would wear a pair of shorts, bibs, inside out.
Yeah.
And then another pair over them, right side out. And he liked the smoothness of the Lycra.
Yeah.
Where it needs to be.
That's probably not a bad idea.
It's worth trying.
Yeah.
Dr. Bob invented and approved. Actually, it might have come from Lon Holloman. Do you know that name? Lon Holloman?
I don't think
Susan Notarangelo. They were early Ram.
Huh.
Early Ram. He might even be race director now. I don't know. I should have him on the pod.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Speaking of pod, Josh Sprague, welcome to Bike Talk with Dave.
Yeah,
thanks,
man.
Tons for finding time and meeting me on this glorious, sunny, warm day in
pretty much just like that.
Austin. Yeah, it is pretty much like that. And
despite the rain and clouds.
Despite the rain and clouds. It is, I have a kid who lives here, another one who was here for an internship. building rockets, which is kind of cool. And by the way, we were up there at the Rocket Ranch yesterday,
yeah,
and they were installing a new engine, which is like four times the one engine of this new rocket is as powerful as four of their smaller engines that
really
is launching on a pseudo regular basis.
That's cool.
They were putting it on the test stand yesterday. We got a tour of the place, and which is just so cool. And my son's like, yeah, nah, they're not going to fire today. They'll just put a tarp over it. And I was like, really? Over a freaking rocket engine overnight?
Yeah.
He's like, yeah, it's like, what's going to break? I'm like, I don't know. It just seems fancy or something.
Seems like it needs some silicone dome or something.
Something. like 7 o'clock last night, he shows me a video of them firing the thing off. And I'm like, dang, nabbit.
Yeah.
We missed a fire by, hot fire test by 2 hours.
Yeah.
Doggone it.
Dang.
I still got to see one of them. Anyway, why'd I get onto that? Austin, Texas.
Just
so
Texas,
we're down
man.
In Austin. It's fun to come down, but this is as green as I've ever seen it here in Austin. It is.
It's just happened
it
in like the last week.
It feels lush.
Yeah. It's just the last week.
Yeah.
But pretty soon it'll probably be dead. Last year it was dead because we didn't get rain from May through September. like zero rain. And but hopefully this year this will carry, you know, but
at least another week.
I have high hopes and low expectations.
Yeah. So, Josh, we met at Gravel Worlds last year. Mm-hmm. Fun to meet you there. Dee and I got our backpacks, our hydration packs. You are the, it says co-founder.
Yeah.
Oh, with your wife.
Yep.
She's your partner.
Yep.
Of Orange Mud.
Yep.
A.
That's me.
What is Orange Mud? How do you describe it? What's your elevator speech on what is Orange Mud?
Yeah. We make hydration packs for endurance athletes and workout accessories.
So, I know you've a dozen years now. Mm-hmm. Congratulations.
Thank you.
And I don't know. I'm always curious, what was it about the hydration pack world that you felt you could do better in 2012? What was missing?
Yeah, so I used to adventure race a lot and mountain bike race and run and everything. And when it was really in the adventure race space where we run, bike, swim, kayak, everything, that I hated all the giant backpacks. And sometimes, you know, if we were doing a shorter race, we still had smaller backpacks and none of them were comfortable. They were all hot. Some of my best performing backpacks were usually the bigger backpacks that were designed with waist belts and whatnot, but I've always hated waist belts, but they were at least stable. But all your smaller backpacks, you know, they ride high on your back in theory, but they swap around, or they kind of slide around your back and chaff you and whatnot, and we were just constantly torn up and constantly hot. So it was actually during an Ironman training cycle, it was towards the end of that I was frustrated one night. I went out for a run, and I was like, man, I'm going to build a different hydration pack. So I went back and destroyed a gun holster, a fanny pack, and a tie-down strap, and I took a hotel sewing room kit, and I sewed up a really, really crude concoction of what would be what's called our HydroQuiver, which is what I launched the business with in 2012. And it was a bottle-based hydration pack that you can mount on your shoulders and right behind your head, which is a really stable point. And when we adventure raced, I constantly had time staring at my teammates' backs. You know, we're out there in teams of three or four racing all the time, forever. And I could see where the pack moved, and I could see where the body was stable. Most importantly, where the body was stable. And so that's where I built the pack. And we've since continued that from the running space into cycling, which has always been my true love. Like I run, I don't even know why I run. I always tell people I don't like it, but I run all the time. It's weird. It's a love-hate relationship. It's like ice cream. It's awesome and bad at the same time. But
is ice it only good? Just a love.
It's just
no,
love.
No, for me, ice cream's just a love.
Yeah. It's the love handles is the problem.
For sure. Well, that's why we ride, why we run.
That's why we have the hate to burn out the handles.
Exactly.
But so the bottle-based pack is what started it in the run, and then we carried over that same methodology. And of course, quality is the other one. I can't tell you how many backpacks I bought, and I still do. I buy competitions packs all the time and test them out and see what I'm doing right, what I'm doing wrong. And there's a lot of good stuff out there, but there's also a lot of stuff that's just junk. Inexpensive stuff is junk, and you'll rip it in like on the first use. I can't tell you. I would say it's 50% of the time that that I rip a pack on the first use that's brand new from some other brand. And it's, and these are, you know, it's usually not the cheap brands. Ironically, it's not some China import direct on Amazon. You know, it's dirt cheap. It's usually the $150, $180 backpack, and you rip it. And
what are you doing? What are you doing?
A lot of times it's just like putting it on or, you know, ripping the tags off. It's always something basic. And or I'll see a weak point. I'm like, yeah, there's no way that isn't going to rip. And, you know, I put the pack on. I cinch it down. I hear just a little seam pop. And, again, I'm sensitive to it because I design and I sew and make the packs, you know. So, but I know, like, within – I can look at a pack and tell you where it's going to fail. And I don't know if a lot of these big companies because it's usually the big brands, they, I think some of them must either contract out their engineering, maybe to, maybe it's a recent college grad that, you know, isn't, is doing something in CAD, but they're not doing something in real world. And maybe they're building it for pros, but not an average human. You know, so the body type's different. I don't know. There's a lot of weird things. Or they try to go too weight-weighting. That's 99%. Well, that's probably 80% of the problems I see is they're using a material to make it lighter than mine, but it's going to rip or it's not going to be stable. There's a million problems that are caused by just going with lightweight. And I always tell people, I'm like, yep, you're right. You know, brand X, they're 100 grams lighter than ours. But when you ride or run behind them, you're going to see that, that you know, 4 pounds of water in a 70-ounce bladder, you're going to see that 4 pounds of water shifting around. What's a projected weight of 4 pounds of water slamming to the right and left over and over and over? How impactful is that compared to the 100 grams you saved to use their pack over mine? Because I use better materials that are actually going to hold it stable. And it's always a point of frustration that I have as a designer, because I think sometimes, you know, I too want to be the lightest pack, but there's trade-offs. You know, do you want to use that material that's the lightest that's going to be really hot to wear? Or is it going to be lightest, but it's going to fail? Or it's lightest, but it's going to allow movement? All three of those things are bad, so I don't. It's just I have my limits to where I can get it to based upon current fabrics, and I don't ever make an exception for that. That's why we have, like, hardly ever a return. If we do, it's just because it doesn't fit somebody right, you know, and that's okay. So that happens. So I think the difference in our brand overall is just quality, performance, durability. You know, I want people, I never want to have somebody call and be like, you ruined my race at X because your pack failed. You know, I never want that. And we've never had that. We've never had it. Have we ever had a failure? Of course, you know, but our failures are teeny. Let's put it that way. We have hardly ever had a pack come back that somebody has ripped. And if we have, it's been one of the earlier generations before I learned about maybe some critical area or something. But I build multiple failure points into our packs. Even if you rip a seam, there's a backup to it. And you can't see it in a lot of our packs because I hide it. But I do that on purpose, just in case, because of, you know, again, it's because of basically a sport that isn't hardly even around anymore because of the adventure race side. I mean, our packs, they could have failed in certain elements where we were in. We could have freaking died. It would have, they were really critical to our livelihood, let alone finishing the race. So we've had a lot of fun building the packs. And, of course, I love to ride everything from, you know, anymore. It's mostly gravel or MTB. But I love to make stuff that I can have a reason to go out and prototype and test on a daily basis.
Yeah, that's got to be a horrible part of the job, isn't it?
Sucks, yeah.
Like, come up with an idea.
Yep.
Sew it up.
Yep.
I got to go try this out. Yep. Go for a 3-hour ride.
Yep. Tell my wife I have to do this today. You know, I have to test this.
Part of my job description.
Yeah. And I have to do it again next week. You know, I need the same long ride. And I have to go. And I tell you, there is as much as I joke about it, there's also some truth. You know, I found in the running packs, any pack, I can make a pack. I can go build a pack in the office this afternoon that would be pretty good for like an 8-mile run. But I found like 13 to 18 miles is the sweet spot running where you find the breakdowns. You find where the material starts to stress just a little bit, you know, because of sweat and fatigue. Or you find, like, you know, this pack feels great for mile 4, 5, 6, 8. But usually about, again, that, you know, somewhere 8, 13, 18. It always seems to be one of them kind of few pieces. All of a sudden, you would find, like, wow, I'm starting to get a hot spot here. But it's always in those distances. And if I find if I can run past 18 miles in a pack, I know it's good. So a lot of times, it's the long runs or it's the long rides where you start to develop what is seemingly a really small weakness, but it starts to really become magnified in the longer stuff. So you really have to do long endurance things to test hydration packs to a level that ensures that they are going to be good.
Yeah, we've been... I think we bought your original or your mainstream. I don't know what model we have.
Yeah. I think it's the endurance pack.
The endurance pack?
I think, yeah.
Sounds really good.
Yeah.
Gosh, it just... You don't even know it's there.
Yeah, that's perfect.
And I'm not like, this isn't a commercial. I'm telling you, you just don't know it's there.
Yeah.
It's comfortable. And we've been, we did 70-mile gravel worlds. We did Schwamigan. And then we just finished Serum. And I wore that thing and didn't even know it's there. And I had a water bottle with me. Mm-hmm. And I poured half of it out before the final 6 miles. I'm like, I'm keeping a little bit just in case I run dry with five to go. Am I,
right.
You know, and I did, and I finished everything. But I didn't want to carry extra water up these hills.
Yeah.
But I had enough with me, and I didn't even know that backpack was on.
Sure.
So I invited you to chat with me because I like your product. I do, and I've had a... I wouldn't say I've had as many as you, but I've definitely been through backpacks. I did a 100K run. Man, I hated that thing on my back. It wasn't yours. I mean, this is 10 years ago, but I hated that thing.
Yep.
10 years ago. It was 5 years ago. Feels like 10. The brand has grown in a dozen years from your original thing.
Yeah.
How big is the lineup now, and who do you serve most?
Yeah, I mean, now we have, I mean, from an audience-wise, it's pretty broad. Like, if you sweat, we pretty much cover you, you know? I mean, the Transition Wrap, obviously, it's just such a cool product. We launched that in 2013, and we sell it in every element you know. I mean, it's endurance horse riders and golfers, tennis, pickleball. I mean, it's, of course, all the, you know, bike and run and try and swim and everything. It's been a fantastic product. But hydration pack-wise, you know, we really are, I mean, we're really strong in mountain bike endurance. Where we really thrive, I think, is the endurance space. Whether it's run or bike, you know, it's your Ironman, your mountain bike and marathon mountain biker, your longer haul gravel rider, your longer haul road runner, trail runner. Not that, you know, people that run 3, 4, 5 miles don't buy our stuff too. We're just more popular in that category, I think, because ultimately, if you're running 3, 4, 5 miles, you might not need a hydration pack.
Right.
You know, but it's always been our space. And we love dirt. Like, I am so passionate about dirt. It's in our name. It's in both my company's names. You know, we got Orange Mud, Seven Clay. We love dirt. And I grew up a country guy, so it's just dirt is extra special to me. So everything to me is mountain bike, gravel, trail running. That's the heart of our business. And so we continue to round out. Anytime I make something, I try to think, all right, where's this good? Like, our bottle-based packs aren't good for cyclists. If some cyclists wear them, I always tell them, like, I wouldn't do it. Your helmet's going to hit the bottle. It's going to drive you crazy. It's horrible. I won't do it. It's terrible, terrible product for that. It's designed for running. But our bladder packs are great on both elements, and I've always been lucky in the designs to be able to get it to perform equally well in both sports, which is important to me because I love both sports, so it's great to be able to go out and use the pack in both. So we're well-rounded there. We sell in probably 30 countries around the world now. COVID changed that a little bit, but we're still probably around 30. We're big in e-com, you know, mostly online, but we are carried in, you know, 500-600 stores. But the changing towel, seat cover, the Transition Wrap, that's what's sold in most retail stores. A lot of retail don't sell hydration packs, especially in the endurance space. You move into endurance, and most people buy online. It's just kind of the, for better or for worse, it is what it is, and that's just the way the industry's been. But yeah, it's been a great thing. We moved our business to Texas in 2019, and we started in California. We left California once we were able to get Orange Mud as our full-time day jobs, and we made the decision, are we going to go to Colorado or Texas? And Colorado is ultimately where I pushed harder for. As much as I love Texas, I've been traveling here since I was a kid. It's something that I didn't want mosquitoes. You know, like after living in California, Arizona over the years, I just didn't want mosquitoes anymore. And Colorado, we just found the ice and the Mostly the ice and the never-ending cold didn't make my wife happy, and honestly, I didn't enjoy it either. And so we only lasted 3 years there, and we decided we're going to Texas, and we love it here. It's been fantastic ever since we came here. We actually built out our business office here first. We tailored it all perfect to Orange Mud, custom paint, AC, the whole warehouse, everything. The whole building is optimized for us. And that's been a really cool growth pattern for us because it allowed us to scale at kind of a perfect time. Little did we know, as soon as we moved in, we instantly were scaling up and growing the business. And it felt more professional, obviously, too, as opposed to running it in our 1,800 square foot basement, which we had in Colorado, and using backup storage units sure. for inventory. Like, that was a pain in the butt. And like every day, my wife would be like, hey, we need, you know, 12 boxes from a storage unit. I'm like, great, let me go over there. And, you know, I had 17 foot tall ceilings in our 30 foot storage containers as storage units. And I built warehouse racks all through them. I mean, I was the most organized temporary storage unit guy around, but I didn't enjoy that. So having our warehouse has been really cool. Yeah. And it's just nice too to have employees there where they don't have to come to your house. You know, it's weird right, for them, for us right. to have them in the house.
And, that makes sense.
And so it's just been as odd as it sounds, it's better team feel too, having an office as opposed to your house running a business. So
yeah,
been a good thing.
Huh? Very cool. So I'm curious about the origin story. Mm-hmm. You said you love dirt and you got dirt in the name.
Yeah.
Tell me about, I'm always curious why somebody feels like it's important enough to take this idea that I've had and offer it to the world.
Yeah.
I mean, I've had a million ideas and I don't take them all to the world. I don't create a business out of it.
Yeah.
What was it about this that you're like, man, it's important enough that I gotta make this happen.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. So the straw that broke the camel's back for me was I was doing a run. I used to run around this substation by our house. It's a power plant substation. And it was like a 0.6 mile lap, and I'd go out there and bang out miles. And so I'd stash water bottles because I hated handhelds, I hated waste packs, and I had a water bottle stash that was right by this road called Imperial Highway. There's a sidewalk there, but it was dirt trail that I was running on, but I had my water bottle there. And on one of the laps, I saw a coyote, and I thought, oh, that's pretty cool, this little coyote running around. But then on one of the other laps, I saw a homeless guy walking down the street. And one of the two either peed or drank from my water bottle because, I mean, I don't know what pee tastes like, but I'm telling you, when I came around on one of the laps and I grabbed my water bottle, I took a drink from it, I'm like, oh, God, something bad was on that bottle. And it smelled like pee, and it did not taste good. And it ticked me off. I'm like, this is why, like, I got to build my own freaking pack. So it was like 3 months later when I went out for a run one night, and I think I was running 8 miles or something, and it was just far enough I wanted water. Because it was in September, it was pretty hot, and that's why I was like, man, I need to build something, and people need this because if it worked, obviously, and once I built it and it didn't move, it didn't bounce, I didn't feel it, I didn't know it was there. That was perfect. That's the whole goal. And so once I made that, I thought this is going to be really cool. This will be great, and it's going to cost. I remember telling my wife, I said, hey, we're going to start a company. It's going to cost $50,000 probably. And worst case, we'll have two backpacks designed for you and me, each worth $25,000 each.
It's great value right there.
And best case, we can, you know, maybe sell some backpacks and pay for this thing. And to boot, at the time, my boy was born in August that year. And this was December when we really got things kicking. And I was like, you know, we quickly saw how demanding the children are, and I was like, man, if we could get it to where one of us doesn't have to work 80 hours a week, maybe, you know, my wife or myself could run Orange Mud from home, maybe we could, especially knowing we're gonna have another kid before too long, maybe we could make that work. So the combination of factors got that going. Yeah, January 2012, we incorporated. By October, we launched at the Soma Half Ironman in Arizona, and then we did the full Ironman after that. And almost everybody buying our packs, I ask them, what do you do? What's your main sport? Everybody's like, I run trail and ultras. That's what I do. and I just do Ironman for fun. And I was like, okay, cool. Like, how do you run 100 miles with a 24-ounce water bottle? And I got, there's plenty of aid stations. I was like, ah, okay, all right. So then that's what made the line expand to two-bottle system. And then, of course, being a cyclist, I wanted a bladder, but yet people run in bladders too. And so we carried into the endurance pack, which we launched at what was used to be the Dirty Kansa a long time ago. I don't remember how many years ago it was, but and it just kind of continued to grow from there.
Huh, wow. Tell me about the name. It's a unique name.
Yeah, so my middle name is Clay, which I always thought was really cool. And I always thought it'd be neat if it was my first name. But when my boy was born, my wife and I argued about it to the nth degree. And I wanted to name my boy Clay. And she's like, no, your name's a stupid name. And
she said what?
Yeah, she said, no, your middle name's a stupid name. We're not going to do that. And I really thought I'd win the argument. Because I normally win the arguments. But I did not win this one. Like, we were leaving the hospital, and the nurses are like, well, what's the boy's name? You need to name him.
Wives are built-in humility.
They really are. Yeah, seriously. I couldn't believe I lost the argument on this one. That's I fought funny. Hard, too. And I didn't even get a middle name. And so we ended up naming him Jax, which is a good name. But it was 3 months after that and that he was born. And when I told her we're starting the business, she's like, okay, whatever. We hadn't slept in 3 months at that point because he never slept. And she's like, yeah, whatever, do what you want. And so I went and I bought 43 domain names on GoDaddy and that night. And one of them happened to be Orange Mud. But the way I got to that is that I always liked orange. The school I grew up going to, was our colors were orange and black. Paxico Pirates in Paxico, Kansas. And honestly, I was kind of sick of orange. After growing up around it all the time, I didn't want to wear orange anymore. But I started to hit a point in my life, I actually enjoyed it a little more. But I liked the color orange. And I tried to get Clay to work. But as I went through the logic of making these names, to have something that's trail and dirt focused, clay evolved into mud, which that's essentially what it is. And mud is sometimes orange, sometimes gray. It depends on where you are. That's how orange mud came through the logic. And then the next day I had some friends, actually a friend of mine from Paxico, from school. He and his wife came down to go wine tasting with us that next day. And we all talked about it collectively. I'm like, here's all the domains. What do you think? And they're like, oh, man, Orange Mud, that's a good name. And everybody agreed, and that's how it started.
Huh, very cool.
So, yeah, and had it 12 years later. So, yeah, it's crazy how it works.
What's the best thing about owning a company like this?
Yeah, the best thing is definitely, it's freedom of being able to, kind of like we were talking about before the podcast today. I like that we have the ability to go to our kids' soccer games. We have the ability to focus on health as a part of our business, but it's something we should focus on anyway. And like last year, honestly, I did a horrible job, the worst I ever have, of focusing on health. And I worked too much. And it was either work or kids' soccer. That was it. And both is work, really. But and both are great. But as we rolled into the end of year last year, I was legitimately frustrated. Like, I was in a bad mood on New Year's Eve. Uh-huh. My wife was even like, what's wrong with you? I had to apologize at the end of the day because I was like, I know I'm being kind of an idiot today. And I was just mad that I wasted a year of not focusing on health, which I've always been really good about. You know, I'm like, hey, you know what? Yes, I need to do taxes today, and I have 5,000 other things, but you know what? I'm going to go on a 6-hour bike ride. That's just what I'm going to do. And I did a terrible job of that last year. And so this year, my wife and I both did a terrible job. So this year, we have been hitting it, and we've been getting really excited to just regroup a little bit and get back into that, because we have the power to set our own schedules. You know, we work all the time. You know, we can take a break. You know, we are entitled, as I think a lot of business owners forget, that you're entitled to take a break. You know, you ask anybody at my office, a lot of times people remind me to eat. Like, hey, Josh, have you eaten anything today? Here's some lunch. I'm like, oh, hey, thanks. You know, I'm like, yeah, you know, I didn't eat anything. This is good. This is good for me. But it's so easy to get distracted. But yet, you know, if I died tomorrow, no one's going to be impressed with me starting Orange Mud or our other business. It's it's, hey, you know what? He did a lot of cool things. And I hope that's what people are going to be proud of. You know, like the fun things that I've done in life, not running a company.
Yeah.
So Orange Mud is a byproduct. The way I always see business is that it's just a byproduct of, in my case, a lifestyle extension. And it does allow us the ability to break off early and go mountain biking for 5 days if we want to. And again, we're terrible at executing, but we are better. We're always working to get there. And it's one of the challenges, I think, of scale is as your business grows, and we started another business almost 5 years ago now, which seemingly, it actually started by accident, kind of, well, really, but it also is kind of tough because we were finally getting those freedoms where we could have more freedom and go play and take advantage of that lifestyle. And then all of a sudden we were back into almost startup mode. So, that's definitely what I would say is one of the perks of owning your own business is certainly having the ability to set your own schedules for the most part. And, you know, it outweighs all the stresses of everything else. But I mean, I think the other part, to take aside from a look that is, a lens not looking at it, where I get the personal enjoyment, at least direct, is it's really cool to see all the people that that buy our packs and go complete their passion project, which is a race or a big bike packing event or a trail run or unsupported or hiking some big massive piece of land that they want to go unsupported or whatever and fast pack it and that's pretty cool. You know, it's cool to see the transformation that. That some of these people have that, like at Leadville, one of the most impactful ever that I can think of is this guy came up to me at Leadville in the marathon, actually. This is probably 7 years ago or so now. And he came up to me, and he's part of the Missing Chins Club. And there were a group of people that a lot of them are severely overweight or have lost a lot of weight and used to be severely overweight and so, hence why they called it the Missing Chins and he came up and he's like why you guys always make these packs for these skinny people? And I was like, hey man, this pack fits a 54 inch chest. I was like, you're a big dude, but I bet this will fit you. And he's like, it's not gonna fit me. And I was like, I'm telling you, it'll fit you. You don't have a 54-inch chest. I'm guessing 50, 52. And he put it on, and I shit you not, he had a little tear come out of his eye. Aww. And I was like, I had a little tear come out of my eye. I'm like, I'm going to hold my stuff together. I got to hold it together. I'm trying to, like, get awkward, you know. And one of the coolest parts is that, like, he was ecstatic about that, first off. And then the next day, I was running the trail marathon. He was doing the half. And the trail marathon intersects the half. And because they do half the course, but they have kind of a loop, so we all get to finish together. And I passed him and his wife not too far from the finish line. And I asked him, like, hey, how's that pack working? He's like, it's great, man. I forget, tears, like, streaming out my eyes. I'm like, cool. I couldn't talk because I was like, I got to keep moving. But I was just too, emotional from it. It was so cool to see that I made something that somebody bought that made them complete something that is a way bigger journey than I can appreciate.
Sure.
And since then, we've had tons of people from that group that have reached out over the years, and I customize packs for free for anybody. If you're bigger or smaller, you don't want extra straps, we'll always customize pack for free. And we've always done that. And it wasn't even a thought, like, no, you don't need to pay. just tell us you need bigger straps. We'll sew them on. It's no big deal. So that's been, I think ironically, I've always cared more about the middle of the back of the pack than I do the front. I think the front's awesome. No offense to them. But the world is, I think, comes a little easier to them, you know? And I don't mean that in the sense that they just are fast, you know? I mean, some are, but they have a lot more resources, you know? And the people in the middle to the back, they often have to work harder than the people at the front, right? I mean, if you're out there and fast people are finishing in 9 hours and the slowest are finishing in 20, like, go to an Ironman or half Ironman and stay till when they tear down the banner and wait. And you see those people come across the finish line, they're so emotional, and there's four people there. It's cool. And as an exhibitor, I've seen that multiple times where we're tearing down at the end of the day, and all of a sudden you see some runners come in. You're like, oh, my God, look at that. These guys have been out there 12 hours and a half marathon. We're like, holy crap, good job. You know, it's so cool to see. But we've always done really well in that side, and I'm proud of that. It's been really cool. So I'd say that is probably, bigger than anything, is our least motivating factor to constantly make products that are awesome. And again, it gives us the fuel to where sometimes you feel like, you know, there's a lot of dollars and cents in a business. You know, it's managing, you know, like we were talking about before the podcast, managing the tax compliance and all the hassles of business suck. You know, it robs you of the fun of what you're really doing. So you have to look sometimes at social media. You have to go to events and meet people to where you realize, like, okay, what we're doing is right. You know, this is good. We are helping, you know, to get people outside. And that's ultimately what I want to do. I mean, that's what I was hoping to do today, but with this rain, it doesn't look as promising to go do this big bike ride I had planned. I have to delay till tomorrow.
I asked you yesterday if you knew something I didn't know, because we're planning on indoor activities today for sure.
Yep.
Shoot, man. I always do this. I have like this moment and my brain like turns off and I forget what I was going to say because it was so profound, I'm sure.
Yeah. Oh, sure.
I know what I was going to ask about. I feel like, and maybe it's just my perception, but I'm kind of among them. You kind of spread your love, spread your joy, spread your good news of this guy's half marathon experience in Leadville through your ambassador program.
Yep.
Tell me about the ambassador program and where'd that come from and what's your hope with it?
Yeah, so we started that in, I think it was 2013, the end of 2013. And
pretty right away then.
Yeah, it was new. And my social media manager at the time, Holly Miller, she was awesome. And she told me, she's like, you need an ambassador program. I was like, we don't need an ambassador program. Why would anybody want to be an ambassador for us? I'm like, this is weird. You build a business, you don't feel that. Like when we launched the hat, you know, my designer's like, you need a hat. And I was like, why would anybody buy our hat? And she's like, well, people like hats. I'm like, that's really dumb. Now I own a hat company, so it's really bizarre. You know, but we end up selling a bazillion hats. I'm like, oh, wow, we have a brand, you know? And so there's these pieces you constantly learn. But I remember telling Holly, I was like, I don't think that's a smart idea. I don't see why anybody would want that. And she's like, no, we're going to start it. We're going to manage it in a private Facebook group. It'll be great. So I said, okay. We can bring on like 12 people. And she's like, okay. And so we started with 12 and 12 or 13, I think it was. And I think we said 12, but then there was like 13 and that had emailed in or whatever. And we thought, you know what, let's do it. And it was a really cool way to get immediate feedback. You know, so like at the time I would post, hey, here's a design I'm working on today. What do you guys think? And I remember when I designed our Heidi Quiver Vest Pack 2, it was largely designed thanks to the ambassadors. I posted a bunch of pictures in there. I said, what do you think? This is, you know, crude, but this is what I'm building. And I got like a ton of feedback. I'm talking like 50, 60 comments. And they're like, I think you should do this, add this, whatever. So I kind of went through all the thoughts, organized it, and then I made all the adjustments and I built another one. I posted it and I kind of repeated that until we went to production. And they really helped to steer it. You know, my windbreaker, I said, hey, what do you want in a windbreaker? Seemingly a simple product, but when you look at like the 40 features in our windbreaker, I could argue with you that windbreaker is not a simple product. And the demands that people have will also blow your mind. And you know, the wants that people have. So it's been really impactful. Anytime I design something that is a change from our standard, I always post in there and just get feedback. And I have to be careful with the feedback because, you know, they are, you know, brand you know, followers you know, they have a love for the brand. So I may not get as critical feedback from them. Now, don't get me wrong. I have some of them that are way very blunt. So sometimes I'm like, I wish you'd be nicer, but that's fine. You know, I've had some people like, that's a stupid idea. I'm like, okay, fair enough. And I have stopped some projects because of that. I'm like, I guess maybe more people think it's stupid than I do. But it has been a great resource to help with, you know, design ideas and iteration. And then, of course, just from the grassroots side, the ambassador team was so impactful to me in the beginning to really get the word out there. You know, as a small brand, it's hard to compete in these giant categories.
For sure.
You know, if for any hydration pack that's probably in your closet, Google the brands. They're probably owned by almost every brand out there is owned by a giant entity. in some big VC or e-com combiner or whatever. We're not. We're a mom and pop, right? And and I'm proud of that. But it's something that there's a bigger monster at play when you're launching a brand. And like for me, I built everything in the USA in the beginning, and the ambassadors really helped to market that. Most stores, they're like, we don't care. I'm like, really? I'm like, all you small retail stores, you guys are small business like me, you don't care? And most businesses are like, we don't care. I had a company tell me, I'll never forget it. He's like, Josh, you're naive and an idiot if you think anybody cares that something's made in the U.S. And I remember thinking, screw you, dude. But, you know, it turns out he was right. People didn't care. You know, if it's equal, same price from making it in the U.S., then maybe. But ultimately, people didn't care. And that was kind of a shocker, where I spent over $500,000 in the U.S. economy building products. And we didn't get any love from it. The magazines didn't give us any press from it or nothing. But again, how do you get in the magazines? Professional athletes. That's most right. of what is in magazines are either wrote by or influenced by the professional athletes or the giant brands. So again, there are all those challenges where I just thought, man, we're made in USA. This is, you know, we're totally different. This should be an easy thing. It wasn't. But again, the ambassadors were impactful with spreading that grassroots message. And so we've continued to grow that over the years. We're around 900 members now, maybe a touch over. And we use it as just a great, you know, a great way to meet up. You know, we go to, like Gravel Worlds last year. We made that one of our official events that we're doing for the year. We're getting ready to do the Whiskey 50 in Arizona next month. And same thing. You know, we told everybody, hey, you know, we're going to have kind of a group event there. It's all meet up, have fun. If we want to race, great. If you want to ride, have fun, great. You want to do any distance, cool. We're doing the Hawk Marathon in Kansas this year. It's a trail run that's awesome. I'm a huge fan of. And same thing. We told all the ambassador team we're doing that. And we like to just kind of do some team events, and it just helps us all to motivate. We're getting ready to kick off April 15th. We're going to do it with the public also. We haven't announced it yet.
Oh, cool.
But we're getting ready to in the next probably week out. We're doing a 4x48 challenge where you run 4 miles every 4 hours for 48 hours. And so you run a total of 48 miles.
You know, I saw that as an ambassador. I'm in the Facebook group, and I'm like, that sounds easy. Four miles in 4 hours? Like, I can walk that on my knees.
Exactly.
You know? For sure. But, oh, wait. And I was telling my wife, she's like, that's like 2 marathons.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, yeah, you're right. Like, I'm doing the math.
Yeah.
So, of course, I asked if we can do it on a bike. But
yeah.
Well, and that, so that challenge is coming up later.
It
maybe is.
So, I came up with the Saddle Sore 150. I thought it was just a fun name. Hopefully there's not already a race that has that somewhere. I didn't Google it. But it's the Saddle Sore 150. We're going to do that. I think actually we're going to pull it into May. We were going to do it in July. But same thing. Self-supported. It's about suffering. And that's what is fun about, you know, I think about endurance sports. It's about suffering, but it's about sharing and suffering. And one of the things that I find as I get older and after, you know, competing in hundreds and hundreds of races, that I don't enjoy the race as much, but I enjoy the camaraderie. And so, you know, one would argue that has to be tied together, but it doesn't, because like with this 4x48, we're just going to post a social, we're going to have fun. And you're going to see people that are going to go, and we're going to do it for a month. So and once you start your 48, you need to stick with it. Or like when you do the 150, you start it, you're going to finish it. But we've done this before in the group. Well, we did a 200-mile ride, and we did another running challenge where we race across the states, which was cool. And it was really neat because you see these people doing things, and you're like, man, you know what? I haven't even rode my bike for a month. I'm going to go do this. Or I haven't even hardly ran this year. It's starting in 3 or 4 weeks. I'm going to go out. I'm going to start running, and I'm going to go do that. Sometimes you just need something to motivate you.
100%.
And that's what's cool. We have 900 friends that we can sucker into doing stupid things with us. And sometimes like this, seriously, I was talking to my neighbor. He asked me, he's like, you ever done it? I was like, no, but I need to, and I'm going to sucker a bunch of other people in, and I need this right now. So for me, it's almost selfish because I personally wanted it to suffer for myself, but I thought I've always been, if you ask any of my friends, I have suckered people into doing so many things that they didn't want to do over the years. And they almost always enjoy it. They may not enjoy it for a year or so, but a year later, they're like, I can't believe we did that. But that's the beautiful part here that we, you know, through me having a selfish need, I'm sucking a whole bunch of other people into doing something that is going to make them proud. And I get to share in the proudness. So that's, again, it's kind of one of the other cool parts of having a business and yet having a cool ambassador team that we all get to collectively share and do stupid things. So it's pretty cool. I'm excited about it.
You've never done the 4x48?
I never have.
I'm super curious how that will go. And I know it's not for bikes, but I might do it on a bike.
Yeah, you should. There's no reason.
I might just do it on a bike.
No official race anyway.
Map out a 4-mile course, wake up every 4 hours. Like, you got to wake. It's got to be super intentional.
Exactly.
You can't just go do it, start off at 5 a.m. and do it.
Yep.
Every 4 hours, you got to set the alarm, wake up, and go do it, whether you want to or not.
Exactly.
And it's a whole weekend. Like, as you're saying this, I'm thinking in my head, like, what's the best strategy to start? Like, Friday at 5?
I know.
Midnight?
Yeah.
Do you finish? Well, then you're finishing Sunday at midnight.
Yeah.
Well, that's no fun.
Yeah.
I don't know. So that's...
I think
that's a cool strategy, cool challenge.
Yeah. I personally want to finish at like 6 p.m. And so my strategy is to start about then.
Yeah.
And I figure if I finish at 6 or 7 p.m., I can make a nice dinner and have a beer. And that'd be cool.
Yeah, like 100%.
So that's kind of my strategy.
You mentioned before we went on the air here that you've probably done 500 races in your life. What's something that stands out as you look back?
You know, I tell you what stands out the most is I've gotten into bike packing, and I really enjoy that because it's unsupported. And each one was extremely special. I've only done three of, four, but three that were unsupported, like just you finish when you finish, I guess. Unbound XL, I did that too, but that is kind of a different, it's a race still, you know,
sure.
An Unbound XL. But
you have a number.
But in the other ones, each one was special. And in Cannonball, in Kansas, I love that race and everything about it, or it's just a ride, but it was the day, like, end of day two, I believe, maybe three, I think two, I was maybe 250, 300 miles in, somewhere in that range, and my knee really was acting weird. I don't know what was happening. My hip hurt. I couldn't hardly walk. And I was in the hills out west of Alma, Kansas, and it was brutal. And that night, you know, we have sat trackers on us, and my dad, who is very not technical savvy, he did somehow figure out how to track me on his flip phone or whatever it was. And so he was going to meet me in Alma. And because I was going to get gas station food at the Stop Shop, and I was like, I'll probably be there about 6 or 7 p.m. And then, you know, this was probably, well, it was probably about that time. I'd been struggling for a while, and I was going to call him and just pull because I thought, there's no way. And I've only quit two races in my life. And one was hypothermia that my team had, myself included, and then... I broke my foot. Oh, no, sorry, three. I broke my foot twice. Well, I broke my foot and I rolled an ankle in Leadville 100 trail run. Both awesome. But otherwise, I was like, I hit a point where I'm like, you know, I don't have anything to prove. I've already done this race. I seemingly have an injury that is probably not going to go away. And I had just stopped at this, I think it was a Lutheran church out in the middle of nowhere. And maybe people still go there, I'm not sure. They had an old hand pump for water out front. And I got some water out there in this little country church. And I sat there on this hilltop overlooking this draw. And I was like, God, what's going to happen today? And you know, I'm sitting there at a church. I just look up and like, God, what's going to happen today? And of course, he didn't tell me anything. So I take off riding and I hit the big hills shortly after. And as I'm riding up, I decide to pull. And after I'd been walking kind of repeatedly on these hills and still struggling, and I pull out my phone to make a phone call. And across my entire iPhone, it said, your iPhone has been disabled.
Oh.
And that was it, like in giant words. And I'm like, what the hell is that? So I was like, that's really weird. And so I rebooted the phone and I got it to boot up and it wouldn't call. And I was like, that's weird. But, you know, it's not unusual. I'm out in the middle of nowhere.
Sure.
But I've never seen it. It's
still like, I guess I'm not dropping right here.
Yeah, and I couldn't.
I got to get somewhere.
Yeah. So that's what that was. Shit, I guess I'll keep riding. So I kept riding. And I get another 2-3 miles, 4 miles down the road. And I see a cell phone tower. And I was like, it's got to be service. And I pull it up. I had my Bluetooth on. I hit it was like, Siri, you know, call my dad. And it said, I can't complete the task or whatever. And I pull out my phone. It said, your iPhone is disabled. I'm like, what is going on? So I reboot it. Whatever, I'll call later. And I tried that 3-4 times. Well, next thing you know, it's like midnight, 1 in the morning. I've been riding the whole time, just kind of making it work. And I see, at this point, I'm finally almost getting to Alma, like way behind schedule at this point. And I see lights coming down the road. And I still remember laughing because I knew it had to be my dad or some drunk high school kid. And my dad pulls up. He's like, hey, what's going on? I'm like, not much. And he's like, how are you doing? I'm like, not good. But I'm like, you know, I was going to quit like 6 hours ago, but I couldn't get the phone to work. So I guess I just had to deal with it. And I'm here. And he's like, well, you want to quit? And I'm like, no, I mean, yeah, but no, I think I'm going to keep going. I'll give it at least another day and see how things will go. So, yeah, man, I end up laying down that night for 4 hours or so. And woke up the next morning and, you know, 200 miles later across the finish line.
That's awesome.
But it was something that I look back at and it had to have been something spiritual in that sense. And I'm not even a super spiritual guy, but it was something where I believe, in that case, God or some being disabled my cell phone, and I couldn't quit. And like, that was just really weird. It was just exceptionally strange. For 7 hours, my phone didn't work. You know when my phone worked? When my dad pulled up. As he literally, I shit you not, he pulled up. And right as he stopped, he's like, your phone isn't working. I'm like, yeah, it hadn't. Oh, so I had 4G coverage. And I'm like, this is insane. I know it works out in that area. I did Dirty Kanza one of the years it went out west there. I remember it worked back then. It was before this race. So it was strange. And then another one, and I was doing Trans South Dakota, and my dog, Lady, is Golden Retriever. She's awesome. And she died many, many, many years ago. I rode next to her for like 4 hours. I couldn't look directly at her, but she was just about 5-10 degrees offline, maybe 20 yards in front of me, and she was running, kept looking back at me. And I'm sitting there riding, I'm like, holy shit, man. I mean, my tears were, I was crying. I was so emotional out there. It makes me emotional now thinking about it. But that was day like 4 or 5 in there. It's probably 600 miles in. And you know, yeah, it was probably something chemical. I'm sure my body just had chemistry that was destroyed at that point. You know, if I'm trying to be scientific to it. But I wouldn't rule out it was something different. You know, it was something that it was way too real. I mean, she was there. And I mean, that was like, if I looked at her, she disappeared. But again, if I look straight ahead, I could see her out of my periphery, clear as day. No different than if she was running next to me. It was bizarre, man. It was so cool. But yeah, so I'd say in the adventure bike category, you will experience things that are just different. And you know, I don't hardly ever got that runner's high and that type of thing. But when I'm purely suffering, and it's not even that really. In the adventure bike side, I mean, you suffer because your butt hurts, you know, from sitting on a saddle for freaking bazillion miles. But it is spiritual in every sense of the word, you know. And I've had a couple other experiences like that in the adventure bike side. But I think that's where it's opened my eyes to something even better than racing. It's just getting out there and doing something big that makes you push your body, you know, physically, mechanically, chemically, beyond what you're used to. And you're mostly fueling off pizza and Coca-Cola from gas stations.
For sure.
You know, so yeah, it's that those would probably rank in for sure as like my top, for sure.
I am planning on, and it scares me, the Arrowhead 135 next year.
Yeah.
I don't have a fat bike.
Sounds
I don't.
Terrible.
I haven't done.
Yeah.
And I just received my orange mud frame bag.
Nice.
So
yeah.
You're gonna help help me get through that thing.
Hope it doesn't freeze shut. That's right.
As my buddy ambassador, I'll let you know how it goes. right. Ugh. Hopefully, we'll get some cold weather tests in beforehand.
Yeah.
But as I listen to you, do you see the orange mud line evolving into some backpacking stuff? Bikepacking?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. Yeah. And so. You know, we launched that top tube seat bag, frame bag all at the same time, and I really like them. Our top tube does fantastic in the bikepacking side. You know, as far as kind of making like the whole custom frame bags, I think there's a lot of businesses that focus on that, and they do a great job. And we've thought about jumping into that, like, you know, let's build custom frame bags for everybody. But ultimately, when it comes down to the resources we have, I don't see that being the plan. But I think our endurance pack is perfect for bike packing because you want just enough to carry your fluids, you want your phone, you want some essential nutrition right up front, but you don't want a lot of weight, and you want to be as pretty much aerodynamic as you can, and it fits the bill. I've used our 12-liter in bike packing, and it's great. I've done Cannonball once with an endurance pack, Cannonball the other time with the adventure pack, and the adventure pack allowed me to carry more crap than I needed. So I'm a huge fan of getting all that stuff on the bike. If I've ever made a bag for bike packing, I think the one area that does need some help, and there's some good ones, but I think I can do some good improvements, is in the seat bag holder. I don't like the giant stick hanging off the back of the bike. I basically want a really fat, oversized bag, and I built one custom for me. It works awesome. It doesn't swing or anything.
Say your $25,000 bag.
Yeah, exactly.
You started 12 years ago.
Yeah, exactly. But I could see doing something there. But some of our focus is it's always on backpacks, but and we'll continue to build out run and bike stuff. And I try not to have much overlap in our categories. You know, like if we have a pack like our endurance pack that covers most of the bill, then why build another pack that just competes with it? I mean, let's tweak it to make it better rather than confuse the consumer, you know, when they're trying to figure out what 2-liter to buy or whatever. So, but I do plan on making one that's a little more mountain bike focused, a little more gear essential, like, right, carry your pump and tools and levers and everything a little bit differently than the way the endurance pack does. We have that in the roadmap, and then a little bit bigger packs for, like, your backpacking side, and there'll probably be somewhat of a crossover into MTB, but I'm a huge fan of getting all your essentials on the bike. I believe in that because let the bike do the heavy carrying. You just carry the bare essentials on your back, and so, you know, I really bounce between those two backpacks now for anything riding. 12-liter, if I'm, like, doing some big mountain bike ride or something, I need layers and whatever, that's where it's great. But otherwise, I don't usually need that much, and I think most people are in the same category. I think a lot of people will buy a 3-liter because they're like, oh, I drink all the time. It's not often you drink 3 liters.
Right.
You know, you may fill 3 liters, but you often don't drink 3 liters. And, you know, if you really need three, carry a bottle in the 2-liter. And, I mean, I've done a lot of pretty epic stuff with the 2-liter, and I've done a lot of epic stuff with the 3-liter, but I also have emptied that 3-liter a lot afterwards. And that extra little bit on your back, that's just an extra couple pounds.
It is.
It can add up and become not comfortable after
a couple pounds up every hill.
Yeah. It starts to suck.
It does start to suck for sure. So, yeah, it's worth thinking about and experimenting with, you know.
I mean,
as you do this longer stuff, every time you're out, you're learning.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, and I mean, to me, I think 2 liters is awesome because you get that three and a half hour reach generally with that. Or even more, maybe 4 or 5, depending on the weather and your pace and all. But you normally need a break after that, you know, and just to hop off, refill for a short bit. You know, as long as you have an opportunity to do that at some point, take advantage of it. Sometimes you just need to get a little blood flow in your legs for, if you're racing and you're trying to split the minutes and everything, you know, sure, you know, maybe you have different strategies. But for most of us mere mortals, we're happy to get off the bike and eat a peanut butter and jelly sandwich and top off some water and maybe sit on the ground for half an hour for that matter. So I've done it all. I've had the super quick transitions, but I've had the, hey, man, I'm going to take a break for an hour and just enjoy life for a minute and eat a pizza. So
yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah, it depends on the person with how they're going to buy a pack. But, yeah, fun stuff.
Speaking of buying a pack, how does somebody find you?
Yeah, orangemud.com. Orange like the fruit, mud, M-U-D. We do have a lot of people that thinks it has 2 D's for some reason, but it doesn't. It's mud like mud and orange like the fruit. So, yeah, orangemud.com. Check us out.
Awesome. I love it.
Yeah.
Listen, thanks again for carving time out of your morning and meeting me here at the coffee shop.
Heck, yeah. Beautiful day.
Beautiful, hot, sunny day.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's not raining right now.
There's still a chance for a ride today. I'm just saying. It only rained like 0.1 inch.
Perfect. Does Texas drink the stuff? If it 0.1 inch in Iowa, we're not riding for 3 days.
Oh, no. It'll be good this afternoon.
Yeah.
Probably good, like, actually right now, anywhere in this area. South Texas, you get clay, or actually North Texas, you get clay, and it could be kind of a mess. But, no, down here, you can go riding right now. Like, Without a problem.
North Texas, that clay, when it rains, turns to some orange mud.
It's orange mud, for sure.
I love it. Thanks again, man. Appreciate it.
Heck yeah. Thanks for having me.
Now that's a guy with a million stories. I'm sure we could have stayed and talked for hours more, but I gotta say, I love hearing the origin story of a successful business like Orange Mud. It's super cool to find out just what inspired someone to actually make the decision to fully commit to an idea. It takes guts. Like Josh mentioned in our conversation, you can follow Orange Mud on Facebook or Instagram, or just dive into the website at www.orangemud.com. Speaking of committing to a great idea, check out the Core Four. Who's ready for some Core Four news? After a huge spike in riders and a super thank you to everyone for coming out this year, these guys jumped right back into the fire. It's no surface untouched again for 2024, because Core 4 24 has a sweet sound to it, no doubt. New routes, new distances, and a new you. That's right, y'all, they are mixing it up with more surprises and delights. New for 24 is the Core 40 distance. Just a bump up from the 20 mile and still has all the farmscapes and B roads and champagne gravel you'd expect from the folks at Core 4, just without the single track. They're telling us 60 is the new 50, miles that is. It's a no surfaced untouched podium eligible route with all the cats in addition to their marquee 100 mile event. It's the perfect blend of competition and community. We want Core 4 to be on your event calendar for 2024. Jump on Bike Reg today, snag your spot before this event reaches its cap. Come ride the wave and get more bodies on bikes. It's blazing hot action every year, and they'll keep the fire stoked all winter long with the 20, 40, 60, or 100 mile route. Core 4 24 has something for everyone. It's time for the next time. Let's go. Now, all that plus this year, they've got some great new plans, including a $10,000 prize purse for the Stone Crusher 100 mile race, courtesy of the new title sponsor, River Products Company. And it honors Chris Lillig. He was an Iowa City cyclist who worked at River Products, and he was unfortunately killed by a drunk driver in 1996. There have been a bunch of races and rides held in his honor since then, and I'm sure Chris would be honored, and he'd still be here racing today if he could. So join us this August in Iowa City, and for more information on Core 4, and the new title sponsor, as well as all the race distances and registration, head on over to core4.bike and why not sign up today. Now, I really appreciate you tuning in each week, and I'd love it if you would rate and review this show on your favorite podcast platform. And if you want to support the show financially, just look for Bike Talk with Dave at buymeacoffee.com and drop a few coins in the cup. If you do, I'd love to send you a sticker. And be sure and check out the Bike Talk with Dave channel on YouTube. Or just go to biketalk.bike to stream every episode. Now, if you are catching this episode the week it drops in early April, don't forget to check out the total solar eclipse on April 8th. I know it's the buzz all around the country, but it's worth it. If you've never seen one from the path of totality, it is worth making plans to do so. And if you can't make it to that path of totality, be sure to not look up. Actually, look down and see all the little crescents in the shadows of the trees. It's super cool. Now, I know a solar eclipse is awesome, but we all know that nothing compares with the simple pleasure of riding a bicycle. Have a great week.